The following is an audio podcast from the Korea Society, celebrating more than a half century of promoting awareness, understanding, and cooperation between the people of the United States and Korea. For more information on our programs, please visit our website at www.koreasociety.org. This podcast is brought to you through the generous financial support of the Tongyang Group. In the areas of financial services and manufacturing, the companies of the Tongyang Group harness the passion and creativity of 12,000 employees worldwide to better serve their clients. The Tongyang Group, a global partner for Korean business. On July 19, 2011, United States Ambassador to the Republic of Korea, Kathleen Stevens, delivered the keynote address at the Korea Society's 2011 annual dinner in New York City. She spoke about the better-than-ever relationship between Korea and the United States, the importance of the free trade agreement, and her own 700-kilometer bicycle trip from Seoul to Jindo.
Well, good evening, everyone, and thank you so much, Ambassador Greg Dawn, for that very generous introduction. I really appreciate it. And also, Don, for your many, many contributions to U.S.-Korean relations over the years. Ambassador Tom Hubbard, Ambassador Mark Minton, ladies and gentlemen, I really am so honored to be invited to speak tonight at such an important event, the Korea Society's annual dinner, such an important event that the U.N. Secretary General comes every year. It truly is an honor. This is the Korea Society and this dinner, and I've seen it tonight as I've talked to many of you, truly does bring together those who have built, expanded, and promoted U.S.-Korea relations in so many fields. And we have a lot to celebrate tonight, and we also still have a lot to do. So I want to talk maybe a little bit about both of those things. But first, there are so many distinguished people here tonight. It is difficult to single out, maybe a little dangerous too, just a few. But I do, of course, want to especially thank the United Nations Secretary General, His Excellency Ban Ki-moon, and his wife, Yoo Soon-taek, for joining us tonight. Secretary General and Mrs. Ban, I can tell you, and some of the rest of you may have been in Korea, I know you were over the past month or so, there were a couple of big moments in Korea over the last couple of months and month or so, and one was, of course, the winning in a very decisive way of the IOC's decision to award the 2018 Winter Olympics to Pyeongchang. But another great moment rivaling that was the re-election in an even more decisive way of Korea's own Ban Ki-moon for a second term as Secretary General. So I bring you, from all of us in Korea, our heartiest congratulations. Also, my good friend who's taught me so much about Korea, newly arrived ROK permanent representative of the UN, Ambassador Kim Suk, and his wife, Ambassador Kim Young-mok, Korean Consul General in New York. We're so grateful for your presence here tonight. And as Don and others have mentioned, but in good Korean fashion, I too must acknowledge and want to acknowledge the presence of my sunbae, my seniors as former U.S. ambassadors of the Republic of Korea, in addition, of course, to Don and Meg Gregg, Tom and Joan Hubbard. I'm so pleased to see Steve and Chris Bosworth here tonight. Chris Hill and Julie Hill. I really do stand on some pretty broad shoulders here. And I also want to thank all the members of the business community, Korean and American, who are here tonight. When I think of all you, Sunbae, and everyone else here, we have young people here as well, thinking of all you have done and are doing over the years for U.S.-Korean relations, it makes me think, and if you've heard me speak before, everything always makes me think of a Korean proverb. You know, when I first went to Korea as a young woman 36 years ago, one thing I liked about it was just like my grandfather from West Texas, Koreans use a lot of proverbs. And one I remember hearing, this is in a time when most of us in Korea got our water straight from the well in the courtyard, was this. 물을 마실 때는 그 우물을 판 사람의 노고를 기억하라. I hope you understood me. When you drink water, you've got to remember the guy who dug the well. And I wanted to say that tonight because there are a lot of well diggers here tonight. Some of them are the former U.S. ambassadors, but a lot of others here. And over the past 3 years, as U.S. ambassador to the Republic of Korea, I have been the beneficiary of your labors. And I thank you. But more importantly, our two countries and the world are beneficiaries. Our award winners tonight, winners of the Van Fleet Award, are the Korea U.S. Business Council, the U.S. Korea Business Council. Well, I know you've been doing some pretty hard well digging as yourselves. And Chairman Hyun Jae-hyun, Chairman Bill Rhodes, what a pleasure it's been to work with you for the past years. I know we were all hoping that we'd be able to thank you tonight and many others in this room for your work by savoring and sipping the fresh, cool water of Korea-U.S. Free Trade Agreement ratification. Instead, we're still digging away. But thanks to you, Chairman Hyun, Chairman Rhodes, many others here, we are almost there. And we will get there. And when we do, we'll probably need to celebrate with something a little stronger than water. But we'll be here to do it. But before I turn to the Korea-U.S. Free Trade Agreement, I hope you'll indulge me to allow me to say a few words about the U.S.-Korea relationship more broadly. I hope you'll allow me to reflect for a few minutes, I'll try to be brief, on what an extraordinary privilege it has been to be a steward of this relationship for the past 3 years. Now, we all know that a high point of being ambassador, especially if you've been ambassador, is when your president visits. That's especially true if the visit goes well. Well, President Obama has been to Korea twice as president, and on each occasion, he has said this, 오늘날 한미동맹은 그 어느 때보다 든든합니다. Actually, he didn't say that. What President Obama has said on each occasion is, our alliance, the U.S.-Korea relationship, has never been stronger than it is today. And I've repeated that in my poor Korean to countless Korean audiences. And, you know, when I say this in Korea, whether in Korean or English, people applaud there too. Polling shows that Koreans agree with President Obama. Some 90% of Koreans say the relationship is in very good shape, and Korean favorable attitudes towards the U.S. are at records high, or at record highs. There is overwhelming support for the presence of U.S. forces in Korea. So that's good news. So, but it does maybe, at least for me, ask the question, why is the relationship better than ever? Now, if I were coming up to New York to be on a certain late night TV program, I'd have a little list here of top 10 reasons. And the Korea Society would be somewhere there, and a lot of you. There are many factors. I want to just maybe mention a few, including a couple that maybe don't get the attention I think they deserve. And then I want to say something about what I think we have to do with this stronger-than-ever relationship. But even before that, I don't think we can talk about any of this without reflecting, as I think we always do, on the extraordinary journey that Korea and Koreans have taken over the past century. I've seen a bit of it myself. Many in this room, I know we have Korean War veterans here as well, have seen even more. It truly is one of the great stories of our time. Think about it. Over the past 100 years, Korea experienced something approaching national collapse. I hope it's okay to say that. Colonial annexation, war, division, more war. And then the start of a remarkable journey of economic and political transformation. I think all of us here have been witnesses or been participants in parts of it. I was a witness in the 1970s as a young woman to that economic transformation and back in the 1980s as a young diplomat to the democratic transformation. They were both equally impressive. and both were equally, I think, difficult and were not achieved without immense effort and sacrifice. What Koreans have built over time in their own country truly does stand as one of the great achievements I have seen, not just in my diplomatic career, but I think we can all say in our lifetimes. And I am grateful to have been a witness to some of it. But speaking of journeys, last month I completed a 9-day, 700-kilometer, I say kilometers because it sounds longer than miles, but that's a little over 400 miles, bike trip from Seoul. We started off at the residence in Seoul, and we finished up, always on a bike, way down in Jindo, just south of Mokpo in Cheollanam-do. Most of it, we went down through what I sometimes call the heart of Korea, Chungcheongnam-do, Gyeonggi-do, Chungcheongnam-do, then down along the west coast to the Cheollados, down to Mokpo. And on the way, we met elected local officials. You know, local autonomy, here's a story that's not talked much about. Very interesting in Korea, but that's another speech. We visited ancient temples, military garrisons, factories, farms, the birthplaces of the founders of Korea's press, government institutions. We saw the mixture of industry and agriculture, large and small businesses that define Korea today. Now, why were we doing this bike ride? I was asked this question a lot. Well, of course, we were indulging our passion for biking and traveling in Korea. But we also thought we were going to kind of ground test the joint visions that our two presidents, President Barack Obama and President Lee Myung-bak, laid out in 2009. And I know you're all familiar with it. I'm not going to repeat it. But it says this is going to be a broader, deeper relationship. What does that look like as you visit all of Korea? Well, we visited businesses. And I could give you lots of examples, but I'm going to tell you about one factory we visited. It was called the Somcholi Bicycle Factory. It's south of Seoul. It's in a gritty industrial area. But you know what? You can get there on a bike path. You know, when you ride a bike in Korea, you don't just ride through sort of green bucolic spaces. You ride through where people live. So we hit this industrial area, and we reached this brand new factory. And I like the name. Some of you laugh. Somcholi. It means 3,000 li. And always reminds me of the beautiful Korean national anthem. I love your national anthem. I hope that's okay. You know, Mugunghwa, Somcholi, Hwarya Gangsan, Rose of Sharon, land of mountains and rivers, natural beauty stretching for 3,000 li. It speaks to Korea's passion, Koreans' passion for the natural beauty of their own country. So here we were at Somcholi Bicycle Factory. And the reason it was so new is because Korea, some years ago, stopped making bicycles, just as the U.S. did. But in both countries, we thought about this, building bikes was at the heart of our industrialization. You know, the Wright brothers, right, went from building bicycles to airplanes. And Kia Motors, I know there's a lot of Kia representatives here tonight, a company that today produces, I'm told, 1.5 million vehicles a year, is that right? Something was founded in 1944, making bikes. And they kind of reassembled the band there in Somcholi to start building bikes. Because now we're both finding that building high-quality bikes is something there's a market for. And what I also found was that this Somcholi bike factory was importing a lot of bicycle parts from small businesses, medium-sized businesses in the United States, from Colorado, from Iowa, from California, from Massachusetts, wherever there are bike fanatics. So what's my point here? With implementation of the free trade agreement, the 8% tariff on bicycle components will immediately drop to zero. And that will benefit this factory and the U.S. businesses. And I'm just saying that one because I saw it, and I could repeat this, but I won't because we can't be here all night. 50 times, the small and medium businesses. I mean, a lot of you represent big companies, and it is incredibly important what you do, but these small and medium businesses, they too will benefit, and consumers will benefit from this free trade agreement. And we saw it there at this factory. This trip we took, we did do it over 2 weekends, so believe me, during the weekday, I do try to do more normal things as ambassador. But we did it because it bridged two Memorial Days, U.S. Memorial Day on May 30th, Korean Memorial Day on June 6th. 2 3-day weekends for those of us at the U.S. Embassy. And I rode over 200 kilometers this trip with U.S. Forces Korea service members who are deployed all over the peninsula in Wijeongbu, Seoul, Osan, and Kunsan. And as we rode down from Seoul the first day, we got to a place near Osan where there's a monument that's lovingly tended by the local residents and the local government. It's called the Monument to Task Force Smith. This is the site of the first engagement between U.S. troops and the North Korean forces who were sweeping south with seemingly unstoppable momentum exactly 61 years ago this month. It was impressive to see this site and this monument and to reflect on a U.S. Memorial Day of all the sacrifice. And at the end of the trip, by the time we got to the bottom of the peninsula, I was on the island of Jindo. And there, it was Korean Memorial Day a week later, and there was a Memorial Day service there too. Aged widows and their families, several generations gathered to remember lives lost long ago now, to preserve the Republic of Korea. But they also there honored the sacrifice of the Americans and the others from the UN forces who joined to preserve and protect our freedoms. What a moving way to end our trip. But throughout all this, I was reminded then of the sacrifice that ensured the survival of the Republic of Korea. And this was always on my mind as I was riding through the productive farms and the busy factories and the hardworking people who have come and still have defined contemporary Korea. So this little trip I took really made me think more than ever that we need to take this better than ever relationship not for granted, these sacrifices not for granted, but think about how we use it to meet the challenges that still face us. And those, of course, are the challenges of North Korea, but also they are the global challenges that our Secretary General thinks about every single day. But I said I was going to talk about, and I guess I've already begun that, why is the U.S.-Korea relationship so strong now? And I have already alluded to one reason, I think, which is, of course, our history of shared sacrifice. Hyalmengwange, it's one of the first phrases I learned in Korean, the relationship forged in blood. It's kind of forgotten over the years, but I thank the Korea Society and all of you for remembering it last year, as did the Korean government, as we marked the 60th anniversary of the beginning of the Korean War. I know last year you recognized General Paek Sun-yup with last year's Van Fleet Award, and I can report to you that he is still working for this relationship. He showed up at the 4th of July party at the residence this year and is as active as ever. But again, why is the relationship so strong? Clearly, also regional trends play a role. Every time I come back to the United States, and I say this as someone who spent a lot of time in my diplomatic career on transatlantic relations, but every time I come back, I do see the growing awareness there is here, not only among our political parties, our political leaders from both parties, but from the American public at large, that indeed the 21st century is a Pacific century. The center of gravity in the world is shifting towards the Pacific and towards Asia. And I think you've seen in the Obama administration a clear indication that just as we have always been a Pacific power, we will so remain. We are here to stay. That's why Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's first trip as Secretary of State was to Asia. That's why the Obama administration signed the Treaty of Amity and Cooperation, paving the way for greater multilateral engagement in East Asia. That's why Secretary Clinton is headed to Indonesia and Hong Kong later this week, and President Obama to the East Asia Summit later this year. And in November, the United States and President Obama will be hosting the APEC Summit in Hawaii. That's why Secretary Clinton has been to Korea four times so far as Secretary of State. But in answering the question, why is the U.S.-ROK relationship stronger than ever, let me also now suggest a few other factors, including underlying changes in Korea itself over the past few decades and the changes that have come with that in the relationship between our two countries. And I'm going to start with talking about something the Korea Society knows well, and Ambassador Minton talked about it briefly, and that's what sometimes we call people-to-people ties. I don't think that quite captures it, but you know, I know people like to focus, and I do too, I'm in the government, on relationships between leaders. They are incredibly important. But I do think It's the, you know, it's the grassroots relationships, it's the rice paddy relationships, I guess, between our two peoples that have multiplied and prospered over the years, and those may matter even more in the long run. And as I've met many of you tonight, I've thought that as I've met many of your children and seen the connections there are between us. And I this is from the perspective, I promise I'm not going to tell too many kind of, oh, in the old days it was this way, but you know, I first went to Korea as a young woman in 1975, and I was the first foreigner most people had ever seen where I lived. It was a big shock to people. Some of them never really got over it. Yeah. But, you know, I never met anyone who'd ever been to the United States. I never met, certainly outside of Seoul. I didn't know people who had passports. I didn't know people who had foreign currency. The idea of studying in the United States was so distant as to be, you know, another planet, not even going to the moon. It'd be going to Pluto, practically. Now, I know the 1970s is a long time ago, but still, that's pretty remarkable change within a generation. And these ties are growing every day. And again, I've talked to so many of you about it tonight. A lot of this happens without the U.S. government having to do anything at all. But I am pleased that with Korea's entry into the visa waiver program in 2008, we've been able to spur even easier people-to-people ties. And I want to report just a few figures to you because I think they are significant of the direction this relationship continues to go in. In 2010, last year, nearly 500,000 South Koreans took advantage of the visa waiver program to travel to the U.S. Now, this program, again, began in 2008, and this is something so that Korean passport holders don't need visas to come for short tourism or business trips to the United States. So that was double over the first year of 2009. So this is really growing. And also, the tourism figures to the United States are significant. In 2010, nearly 900,000 South Korean tourists and business travelers visited the U.S. overall. That's a 38% increase over 2009. Now, you could attribute some of that to a recovery from the recession, to exchange rates, but these are record-breaking numbers. They make Korea the seventh largest source of tourists for the United States, and all the trends are in that very upward direction. In the last fiscal year, the consular section at our embassy in Seoul issued over 67,000 student visas. That's a 9% increase over the previous year. And, of course, Korea has long been, per capita, the largest source of students by country. I'm not saying that right, in the United States. But even so, 9% increase last year. You know, I know education is a big deal in Korea. I started off teaching in Korea. I know there's something called gyeokgyeol, which means education fever. And I know sometimes it becomes almost a sickness. But, you know, I know that Koreans care about nothing more than their children, and education. So when I see Koreans investing their most precious resource, their children, to get an education in the United States, something that matters above all, what a compliment not only is that to our educational system, but also what a vote of confidence by the people of Korea in the future of this relationship. We've also seen over the last year a 15% increase in investor visa applicants compared to 2010. And these investments not only create jobs and opportunities, but they also obviously increase the bonds between our people. I also want to mention another program that was started, like a lot of things I get involved in, by my predecessors. And it's a program called WEST, Work, English Study, and Travel, which is a youth exchange program to try to make sure we provide to Korean students from all backgrounds, not just elite backgrounds, a chance to study some English and to have a U.S. experience by participating in internships. I know the Korea Society knows about this program because you've offered a lot of support, and Mark and Tom, I thank you for that, including providing great internships for some of the participants. This program's going really well, even though it started in a year of economic recession when it was pretty tough for a lot of students here in the United States to get internships. But we've had over 1,000 students participate, Korean students participate, since it began 3 years ago. And just a few weeks ago, I met 5 new WEST participants. They're university students who are originally from North Korea. And they're coming to participate this summer. I asked them what was their biggest worry about coming for this program, and they said their worry was they thought that all Americans had cars and they didn't know how they would get around without a car. So we talked about public transport, but I really do salute their spirit, their determination, and I think they'll do incredibly well. And again, I know the Korea Society and talking about people-to-people ties, you have helped to build this stronger-than-ever relationship with your program for educators, American educators going to Korea, exposing students here in the United States to Korean culture, teaching teachers here in the U.S. workshops on Korea, because it has to be a two-way street. And we have to make sure that we do things here in the United States as actively as we try to do them in Korea. And I love the idea of going online and learning Korean. I'll definitely sign up. I've seen for myself the impact of Project Bridge. It's a great program with high school students who do a year-long series of workshops. And they learn everything from Joseon Dynasty and earlier to the 1992 riots in Los Angeles. I've met these students before they've gone to Korea, while they've been there, and when they've gone back, and I see the life-changing impact it has on them and on their understanding of the great relationship, the important relationship between our two countries. And, of course, we can't talk about people-to-people ties without mentioning the extraordinary Korean-American community here in this country who contribute so much to the United States, and to the ties between our two peoples. And there is no better symbol of the Korean-American experience than President Obama's choice to be the next Ambassador to Seoul, Song Kim. Born in Korea, Ambassador Kim has risen to be one of America's top diplomats, and I know he's going to take this relationship to an even greater level. So the people-to-people ties do underpin a relationship that is broader and deeper and more resilient than ever before. But here is another factor in this stronger relationship, and it's been alluded to already this evening. It's this notion of global Korea. And I put these little quotes because I used to kind of think global Korea was a bit of a slogan, you know, something some, you know, embassy or government would come up with. But since I've been in Korea over the last 3 years, I now see it as a mindset that is prevalent, especially among the younger generation of Koreans. But I also want to say to those of you who are here in the United States, then to my American colleagues, that, you know, sometimes when we talk about global Korea, I think sometimes we sort of have in our minds that, well, now Korea is prosperous and democratic. It's ready to join the U.S. in global activities. And, of course, the Secretary General is a great emblem of global Korea. But living in Korea feels a little different than that. And I don't know if I can make this distinction. But, you know, this is a country that, again, when I first went there 30-odd years ago, another proverb I learned, which also has a well in it for some reason, but Koreans, you start to talk to them about the outside world, and they say, oh, you know, 우리는 우물레는 개구리예요. All right? You know, we're frogs in a well. We don't know what's going on outside the world anymore. You know, nobody says that anymore. I'm the only person who seems to remember that proverb. But Secretary General, you remember it, right? So, things have changed. And people have already talked about that. But the G20 last year was one sign of this, clearly. I mean, things have changed a long time before that. But this was a very big deal for those of you who weren't in Korea for it. But even if you weren't, I think we saw that the statement adopted by the G20 leaders stands as a testament to Korea's commitment to global leadership and cooperation. Korea's commitment to development, international overseas development. Korea remains, as far as I know, the only country that was ever a recipient of Peace Corps volunteers, I was one, that now has its own volunteers abroad. And I meet them all the time when they come back. And they come back knowing about other countries in a different way. That's part of global Korea. Korea has pledged to triple its development assistance budget, and we'll be hosting the OECD's Development Assistance Committee and fourth high-level forum on aid effectiveness later on this year. I do think that Korea's own development experience, as Secretary General suggested, its own development experience lends a unique perspective in the way it approaches development aid. And, you know, over the next year, never mind what's gone before, Korea is hosting an astonishing array of global events over the next several years. Here's just a few. The 2011, later this year, IAAF Track and Field World Championships in Daegu. This is a big deal. 2011 Formula One Korean Grand Prix. Then on kind of a different topic, of course, the Nuclear Security Summit in Seoul in March 2012. The Expo 2012 in Yeosu. The 2013 Special Olympics World Winter Games in Pyeongchang. And, of course, the Pyeongchang Olympics in 2018. It has struck me, and I know everyone knows about the Pyeongchang Olympics in 2018, and it's, I think, sort of symbolic that it's 30 years after the Seoul Olympics, which was just an important milestone in Korea's modern history. 30 years, I can't count. But 25 years after, Korea is going to be hosting something called the Special Olympics World Winter Games. This is the thing that was started by the Kennedy family. They came over and got the support to do it, including from a lot of Korean businesses, and really says something about, again, Korea as a society, that it's going to be bringing, hosting athletes with developmental challenges from all over the world 25 years after the Seoul Olympics for a different kind of event. But let me also say a word, if I may, about all these events. I could talk about all of them, but the Yeosu Expo. Now, for those of you who don't know where Yeosu is, I expect most of you do, it's down on the southern coast of Korea, surrounded by all these beautiful islands, strangely not very known, even to people who live in Seoul, but thanks to great train service and other things very close by, it's spectacular, with a lot of business and investment as well. I've met with the Yeosu mayor and the Cheollanam-do governor several times. This is going to be a very big deal. At the national level, too, I've heard from the foreign minister and others how important it is that the U.S. participate in the 2012 Yeosu Expo. The theme is the living ocean and coast, and as a leader in environmental technology and addressing climate change, I think this Yeosu Expo is a great opportunity for the U.S. to showcase our businesses, our innovation, our leadership, and, of course, to showcase all the ways in which we work with Korea, all the ways in which we are present in the region. So the U.S. Pavilion will display the very best of our country to millions of South Koreans and other visitors from the region, and it will bring to life another facet of our deepening and broadening partnership. So I do hope we will see a lot of participation, broad participation, by business leaders. But Korea is global, as I said, as I see it every day, and it does mean that there are so many things that we can work on together. And again, if I may say, Secretary General Ban, I see every single day how your life and work has inspired a whole generation of young Koreans to think about how they can contribute globally. But here's one other reason. I know I'm going on. One other reason on my list of, I'm not going to give you 10, reasons why I think the U.S.-Korea relationship is in such a special place right now. And that is, it's Korea's democracy. And kind of like our own democracy, sometimes we take it for granted, but I don't think we should. And I don't, because again, I lived in Korea not only in the 70s when the Yushin Constitution was in effect, I lived there in the 80s when I saw the struggle for democracy. And back in those days, you know, Korea was a great place. There were a lot of evident strengths, but the problems of political legitimacy, of human rights, were glaring. This is within my memory. And I saw people who had their lives damaged, distorted, lost by this lack of political legitimacy and democracy. And what I also saw was Korea moving in the 1980s towards a decision to really build a democracy that began with the right to directly elect a president, and then has gone on in the ensuing years to build the institutions, the rule of law and the press and everything else necessary to solidifying that democracy. So I saw Korea back then make an irreversible decision from which it has never looked back. And what's happened over the past two decades? Power has been held in Korea by all parts of the political spectrum. And throughout that, while like our democracy, it can be a little bumpy, Korea's economy and democracy has continued to thrive. Korea has continued to become more global. It's overcome its crises as it has matured. And U.S.-Korea relations have also continued to thrive. So that brings me to my next point, and I'm getting to the end of this list, about why I think this relationship is in such good shape. And I think it's because it enjoys such strong bipartisan support in both countries. Now, I certainly saw this recently over the spring break for the U.S. Congress. We had a lot of congressmen and senators visiting from both parties, traveling together in bipartisan groups. I thought that didn't happen much anymore, and it made me pleased as an American to see that it did. They came to learn about the breadth and the depth and the importance of this U.S.-Korea relationship, and it bodes well. It bodes well here in the United States for the relationship, but I see the same thing in Korea, bipartisan support for a strong U.S.-Korea relationship. You can disagree about the details, but there's not disagreement about the key importance of keeping the relationship strong. And, of course, democracy means shared values and shared interest and ways in which we can work together around the world. So all these elements together, bipartisan democratic cooperation support, our people-to-people ties that underpin our shared interests and values, the changing geopolitical landscape in the region, important unfinished business on the Korean Peninsula. I haven't gotten there yet. I was hoping Ambassador Bosworth would say a word. And Korea's global interests. With all that, I think you do have a relationship that is not only stronger than it has ever been because it is broader and deeper and more resilient. It's also more important than it's ever been. And I think it's a natural partnership. As Korea has become more global, we find that our interests, ideas converge, and we can cooperate on a host of global challenges together. So that gets into what do we do with this stronger relationship? And one is we work on some of those transnational challenges and transnational opportunities. Former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger visited Seoul last year, and one of the things he said, which stuck with me, was international relations, he said, have become truly global. It seems like kind of an obvious thing to say, but I think it's worth kind of reflecting on, because whether it's working to reduce carbon emissions or reducing the threat of international security in Afghanistan or the Horn of Africa, supporting recovery efforts after natural disasters, whether it's in Haiti or Japan, or addressing child and maternal health needs in sub-Saharan Africa, a lot of the issues the UN is working on, these are all issues where the U.S. and Korea find we are natural partners in addressing these kinds of issues. That's why I think it was very natural for our foreign ministers, Foreign Minister Kim and Secretary Clinton, to sign an agreement just a few weeks ago to identify areas where we can work together more closely on overseas development assistance in pursuit of the UN Millennium Goals. And I think the other place where we see that natural partnership are, again, in many of the businesses represented here tonight. And you could give examples better than I could, but here's just one that I've thought about a little bit. President Obama has mentioned a couple of times, you know, there's a new hybrid car called the Chevrolet Volt. And it's really the culmination of a partnership between a Korean firm and an American firm, LG Chem and Chevrolet. LG builds the battery cells in Korea, ships them to Michigan, where they're assembled into a battery pack and placed into the Volt. And the result is the most advanced commercial vehicle, winner of the Car of the Year at the Detroit Auto Show earlier this year, and a technology that promises to reduce our reliance on imported fossil fuels. We had a Volt in Korea, and we were driving it around, and I have to say people were really, really impressed by it, as they are here. But clearly, a step forward that would not be possible without that natural partnership. We have to work together on things like climate change, one of the most crucial challenges of our time. And the good news is here is we've actually been working on this together in quiet ways longer than most people know. I went down to Chungcheongbuk-do, we were talking about it, Secretary General's home province, some months ago, to visit what sounded like a very grand thing. It was called the Korea Center for Atmospheric Environment Research, because we were celebrating 20 years of cooperation between this institute and the U.S. NOAA, right, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. And I got down there, and it was kind of, frankly, I mean, in the middle of nowhere. It was just out in the countryside. It was a little building. There's a few very dedicated scientists there, Korean and American. And you know what they've been doing for 20 years? They've been going out, and they've been capturing air in tubes. And the U.S. diplomatic role in this is to take those tubes and send them back to NOAA in the diplomatic pouch. I was really glad to know the diplomatic pouch is used for something really useful, sending this air back. And what it's done is to give our scientists a baseline to look at carbon change, carbon emissions, and climate change over the past 20 years as China's industrialization has gathered pace. Now we're building on that, and we're natural partners. So, you know, when President Obama, and I, you know, he used this phrase, and I actually liked it. I don't hear it repeated enough, so I'm going to repeat it. He talked about we have to win the future, winning the future. And how do we do that? Tapping into the creativity and imagination of our people. I think that's why he talks about Korea so much. One, because he sees that Korea understands the need to do that. And two, because if we are going to win the future, it's going to have to be in partnership with natural, like-minded, capable partners like Korea. And what else do we have to do with a stronger-than-ever relationship? Well, we do have to continue to work together to address the challenges that are posed by North Korea. It has been a difficult period. It's too late in my speech to go into details, but as Steve Bosworth and Chris Hill and Ambassador Kim Sook all know too well, we have been faced over the last 2 years plus with a series of challenges, provocative actions from North Korea, and very difficult situations. We have stood together. We, Seoul and Washington, and the international community have spoken with one voice in making clear to the leadership in Pyongyang that it is on the wrong path and that there will continue to be consequences to staying on that path. At the same time, we have sent an equally clear message that there is another way forward, one of genuine negotiations leading to genuine progress and improvement. Our new Secretary of Defense, Liam Panetta, said recently, successful deterrence creates the space within which diplomacy can operate. So we will continue to make clear that there remains another path available to North Korea. We do want to see North-South relations improve on the Korean Peninsula, and we want to see the DPRK demonstrate the change in behavior that would show that it is ready to comply with international law and to join the international community. I am not myself pessimistic, and Don, I appreciate your words. I know that the people of North Korea have the same human potential and aspirations as their brothers and sisters in the South. And I think our job as allies of the Republic of Korea is, of course, to keep the Republic of Korea secure while working with Seoul, our partners, and our allies in the region and in the United Nations to hasten the day when the Korean Peninsula is whole, free, and at peace. As our two presidents have said in their joint vision statement, we want to use our alliance to establish a truly durable peace on the Korean Peninsula, leading to peaceful reunification on the principles of free democracy and a market economy. So, what else do we have to do on this stronger-than-ever relationship? Well, I'm finally getting, and this is the punchline, I guess, of the speech here, or to prepare the way for our awardees, of course, it's the Korea-U.S. Free Trade Agreement. When I first arrived in Korea as ambassador 3 years ago in September 2008, I said I wanted to take the U.S.-Korea relationship to the next level. Well, the one single thing we can do that's within our power to do to accomplish that is to ratify and implement the U.S.-Korea Free Trade Agreement. Now, this is an audience that knows a lot about the Korea-U.S. Free Trade Agreement. You know how important it is. You know it will strengthen our trade and investment ties to Korea's burgeoning economy. And you know it will also bind our alliance, make us even closer, and anchor the U.S. economy to a dynamic Asia-Pacific region. It is critical to reinforcing one of the most important security relationships we have. It's good for consumers. I have a lot of data here. I think Chairman Rose and Chairman Hyun can talk more about this, but it's good for businesses, it's good for labor, it's good for consumers. And what I wanted to say to you is, having come here to the United States from Seoul just last Friday, you know, the Korea-EU free trade agreement was implemented on July 1st. And what I've seen is Korean consumers and businesses, you know, paying attention to Korean goods and businesses in a new way. I want to see the same thing happen for American goods and American businesses. You know, I'm getting tired of opening up the newspaper every morning and sort of seeing, well, you know, now Korean consumers are looking at the European wines. I think that's great. But I see the impact the FTA has even beyond what's in the text of it. I've got a lot of examples of the things I think will happen fast and quick on, and I know you do too, once we ratify the FTA. Some of our favorite items, Koreans love pistachios, cherries, will gain duty-free status on day one of implementation. Korea's 15% tariff on wine will be eliminated immediately. And one of our most important industrial exports to Korea, semiconductor manufacturing machinery, will also gain immediate duty-free status. And services, as many of you know here, is also extremely important. The FTA will open up Korea's $580 billion services industry. And that's good news, not only for all you lawyers and bankers here tonight, but for the Korean economy as a whole and for consumers, who will indeed benefit from the dynamic gains of increased competition and improved services. So we're now on the home stretch. The administration is talking with the key legislatures and committees about the implementing legislation, as well as the two other pending FTAs, Panama and Colombia, and the other trade legislation like the trade adjustment assistance. Given the strong bipartisan support in Congress for CORUS FTA, we do hope to get this historic agreement approved as soon as possible. And I have to say, without the strong support of private citizens, organizations, and businesses like those here tonight, we would not be on this home stretch. So let's keep at it. Let's keep at it. Because the U.S.-Korea relationship is a success story, full stop. We have a proud history of shared sacrifice, of a close security partnership that has survived some 60 tumultuous years. And now we do so much more together. We do have important and challenging work ahead of us, and this strong relationship that does enjoy bipartisan support in both nations will be key to accomplishing that work and to winning the future. But we cannot take this relationship for granted, or else the challenges, whether it's North Korea or to global climate change, will remain unmet, or worse. And because I ride bikes, I sometimes say, you know, I really do think that the U.S.-Korea relationship is sort of like riding a bicycle. And if you don't ride them very much, you know, the hardest thing about riding a bike is when you slow down, right? You tend to fall over. We cannot slow down. That's the nature of Korea, but it's also the nature of the relationship. So let's get the Korea-U.S. FTA done. Let's take this relationship to another level. My final thought here is in thinking about what this relationship looks now, and so this is kind of my bread and butter, although it's more of rice and kimchi when I'm in Korea, is talking about, you know, where we take this relationship. And shortly after I arrived in Seoul, I was given a copy of a calligraphy that was written in 1949. And given to a man named Gregory Henderson. Some of you may recognize his name. He was at the U.S. Embassy then. And it was given to him by one of Korea's leaders for independence, Mr. Kim Gu, who was assassinated later that year. But he gave this inscribed to Gregory Henderson, and said, I was happy to get a copy of this. And what it says is, Hanmi Jinsan Pyeongdong Hojo, which... You can correct me if I have the translation wrong, but these are all Chinese characters, of course. The Korea-U.S. relationship is such a Korea-U.S. friendship, inequality, and mutual cooperation. So I have that hanging up at the residence because, you know, when I think about what does it mean to have a U.S.-Korea relationship that's better than ever, Actually, I think what it means is we become closer to that vision expressed in 1949, early in the history, in the modern history of Korea, and the early history of the modern U.S.-Korea relationship. That's the kind of relationship we want. That's where I think we have gotten. So as I prepare to leave Korea for the third time, I leave with a greater appreciation of the extraordinary history we share, but I also leave with a sense that our most important days are still ahead of us as we address the unfinished work of achieving genuine peace and reconciliation and freedom on the Korean Peninsula, as we build sustainable economies and create good jobs for our citizens, and as we address the global challenges that will shape our children's future. And I know that this audience here tonight, and as I think about children's future, I'm so pleased to see so many of you have your highly accomplished children here as well. This is the task before us, and I thank the Korea Society. I thank all of you for bringing us to this point. I do believe we have a basis now to accomplish the work that still remains unfinished and which will make the days ahead for the U.S.-Korea relationship not only better than ever, but more important. Thank you very much for having me here tonight.
The opinions expressed in the preceding program are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Korea Society, its staff, management, or sponsors. Thank you for listening to this Korea Society podcast. If you enjoyed it, please consider becoming a member. Visit www.koreasociety.org for information about memberships and to learn more about all the programs available at the Korea Society.